Is groupthink really a thing? How does that affect affluence? Why do people resist you? How do you melt that ice of resistance? Thanks for being here. Let's get into it.
Maximize Your Influence is your podcast for the latest persuasion, sales, and negotiation techniques. Our mission is to help you influence on command, anyone, anytime, anywhere. Your host is the author of Persuasion IQ, Laws of Charisma, and the best-selling book, Maximum Influence. Now, your host, Kurt Mortensen.
This is Maximize Your Influence, as you know, where we're going to learn some techniques, some tools, some skills about persuasion, motivation, influence, the things that not only help you in your self-persuasion mindset side, but it helps you influence others. I've said it before, everything you want in life is on the other side of persuasion or influence, to get others to want to do what you want them to do and like doing it. Hope you're having a great week achieving your goals. My week was pretty good. Didn't do much travel, did a few things here and there. Got to work on some of those pet projects, things that don't always get the time you want to give them. But hey, let's learn some skills. Let's talk about it. Let's dive into the persuasion blunder.
Don't.
You know, they say, if you wait until the last minute, it only takes a minute. Procrastination is a killer. Now, there is a time and place, even a good TED Talk on the wonders of procrastination, that you should procrastinate. I get it, but it's a blunder, especially in the corporate world. People just show up at the last second. They haven't prepared. They really didn't think about it. They're prepping during the meeting. They're finding the answer during the meeting. They weren't ready for the meeting. That's something that's just not very professional, but a lot of people are doing it more and more. I get it. We're busy. Where do we spend our time? But if it's something important, you want to maintain the relationship with your coworkers, you want to stay employed, you want your clients to come back, you've got to prep. Now, lawyers are also busy people, and this is the blunder. I was doing a coaching session, and this guy just went off on his lawyer. Again, they are busy people, but he showed up. There's the lawyer and was prepping during the meeting, was looking up notes during the meeting, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, but if the client or customer feels that you're making it up as you go along the way, that you haven't prepared, that you're winging it, one size fits all, that you really don't get them, and it doesn't even have to be the truth. Maybe they do get you. Maybe they did prep, but a lot of times just your preparation, your confidence can really hold you back. Now, if you're feeling overwhelmed, remember the overwhelmed brain says no. Break things into smaller, manageable, bite-sized pieces. I know, and I get overwhelmed. I just want to take a nap. Again, I get it. We're busy, but the client, the customer, they need to know that you've done your research, that you're prepared for the meeting, that you're not going to treat them like everybody else, that you're going to get their problem and find the right solution. That is what you're looking for. And so this lawyer is the blunder because they didn't prep, but even if they did, it didn't come across. In fact, a fascinating study I read a while back was a lawyer that walks into a room and is all shuffled and papers everywhere and just, you know, finding their seat, the way they pour their water. The jury sees this versus the lawyer who might not even be prepared, but they walk in calm and they have their briefcase, set it calmly on the table, sit down, they're ready to roll. So this could even come across in your nonverbals to where are you coming across prepared, the way you walk into the room, the way your papers are set up, the way you handle your paperwork, the way you open a briefcase if you have one, even the way your PowerPoint's set up, or even your desktop. It was fascinating the other day. I saw this presenter getting ready, you know, plugging their computer into the projector, and the projector showed their whole desktop on their computer. And there was stuff that was all over the place, very messy, very cluttered. And the person next to me says, "Wow, I'm not sure what to expect from this one." Now, the presentation was pretty good. It was just that initial first impression. So remember, slow is fast, which means be prepared, spend the time so you come across as prepared. And number two, act prepared. Stay calm, cool, and confident as much as you can. Otherwise, people will think you are not prepared. And that's when you start losing credibility and the ability to persuade. So there you have it. That's our persuasion blunder. Which brings us to our geeky scholarly article. This is from Psychology Today and Dr. Wu from Montclair University. That would be in New Jersey in the United States. Then we've all heard about groupthink. Wait a minute, maybe there's some positive things here. Because we think about groupthink negative, everyone jumping off the cliff. Bad things happening, products fail, everyone's saying yes when they really wanted to say no. They're saying groupthink can positively impact project success. So they're going to talk about Irving Janis, who came up with the concept of groupthink. Now this refers to when group members quickly align on certain decisions without critically evaluating or suppressing alternative ideas. They just agree because the boss said, just because it's easier, because they think the whole group agrees, so they go along. And there's a lot of bad examples of this. We can talk about Pearl Harbor in the United States, not being prepared for that. That was groupthink. The failed Bay of Pig invasions from President John F. Kennedy. That was a failure of groupthink. The Great Recession of 2008 was a product of groupthink. The Challenger disaster with the faulty O-rings by the engineers. Another challenge of groupthink. So there are definitely some negative sides and some negative connotations to that. But they're saying groupthink can have beneficial aspects, particularly in a complex, urgent, high-stake project environment, which is pretty much everywhere. I don't know if anybody says, yeah, I work in a not-important, low-stake, non-stressful environment. I don't think I've really heard that one before. But here are the benefits of groupthink, where everyone's starting to get on the same page quickly and agree quickly. A unified vision. In the early stages of a project, you know, those kickoff meetings, getting things ready to roll, quickly establishing a shared understanding and getting that enthusiasm going about the project and the procedure can be very helpful. They're saying a healthy level of groupthink helps cultivate solidarity, unity between the team members. So you get better commitment and more productivity, leading to more efficient and effective execution. Huh, I see that. As long as they're heading the right direction, I mean, you want people to oppose and say things that this won't work. But I guess if you knew you're heading in the right direction 100%, then to quickly get people on board can be helpful. They also said it can enhance group cohesion. So when there's a project that has high urgency and time is a critical factor, that the rapid formation of consensus is essential. They're saying this groupthink facilitates faster decision-making, which is important in tight schedules, and to make that quick decision. I agree with that. That is true. As long as the decision is correct. That's the downside, right? Deciding too fast without seeing every side of the issue. The next one is strengthening decision confidence. They're saying for project leaders, groupthink can bolster confidence in their decisions. That the consensus lends to legitimacy to the decisions and boosts team morale because everyone thinks you're on the same page, go the right direction. That increased confidence is critical when the project is first getting started. Instead of everything being ambiguous, we're getting on the right direction real fast. Next one, interesting, quick response to external pressures. Groupthink enables team projects to unite swiftly in the response to external threats or opportunities. So they're already a team, they rally around, they get it done, and it brings the team together towards a collective action, thereby enhancing the likelihood of successful adoption. And it also reinforces team culture and values. So basically brings the team together faster, more cohesive, more efficient, handling changes, and making those tough decisions have all been enhanced by groupthink. So final comment is, while groupthink has been historically associated with poor decision-making and those famous failures we talked about, groupthink's potential benefits in a project management context, particularly in the circumstances we talked about, are significant. These benefits include fostering unity, expediting decision-making, and reinforcing team values during these complex, high-pressure projects. So there's a different angle, a different opinion on the world of groupthink. With that, let's get into a listener email.
Oh, boy.
This is from Patricia from London. She says, Kurt, thanks for the podcast. It's making a difference, and I'm persuading with power. Thanks, Patricia. I have a manager I'm working with. They won't give me the time of day. They're cold. They're resistant to me. They shut me down in meetings. We're equal in authority, but he is acting like he's my boss and that I am not qualified to work there. We have to work together. What should I do? All right, Patricia, let's talk about it. I mean, first we need to back up and see, all right, is this how you're reading it? Is this actually true? Do other coworkers see this? So let's talk about melting the ice of resistance. Now, there's a resistance you get when you're closing with somebody, you're getting that call to action, you're asking them to do something, but this is resistance you get before you're even doing anything, before you even met them, before they know about your product or service. How do you melt the ice of resistance? Now, I feel like I'm a connoisseur of ice. I love ice. I love chewing ice, which they say is not good for your teeth, and it could signify other things, which I don't think is true. But anyway, that's what they say. And it's hard for me to travel. I know in Europe, in the Middle East, in most places in the world, ice is like, what? You want ice for your drink? You want your drink cold? Don't you know that if it's hot outside and you drink a cold drink, you're going to die? You're going to have a heart attack? I mean, some cultures say this. And I just love ice. I want ice. And so I actually went and bought a commercial ice machine so I could have the best ice. Because there's a big difference between how ice is made. Now, the ice in your freezer is cloudy and white, but the high-end ice you would buy, say, at the supermarket is clear. Now, wait a minute. What's the difference here and why are we talking about ice? Hold on. Hold on. We'll get there. Now, most people, if you go to a restaurant or bar, prefer the clear ice. I mean, that's quality ice, right? You don't want the cloudy ice. It could be a function of the purity of water or how it was frozen. See, a freezer in your home typically freezes the water relatively quickly, which traps all the air bubbles, the impurities, all the minerals get pushed to one spot, making it cloudy, making it kind of white in the middle. Commercial ice makers freeze the ice in layers. So there's no air bubbles, the impurities don't get pushed to one place. And so it's done in layers. So some water flows, freezes a little bit, more water flows, freezes a little bit, water flows, and eventually you have a whole piece of ice. So that's the difference. So why I'm talking about this is I want you to think about the layers, freezing it a little bit at a time. So we're going to thaw it a little bit at a time instead of in one meeting. So just like good ice is frozen in layers so it's clean and it's pure and it's clear, you're going to melt the ice in layers a little bit at a time. So who knew? Come to the podcast on influence and you're learning about ice. So we're going to use ICE as an acronym to help you melt the ice of resistance. And this is the initial ice, not the ice you're getting at the close. Those are some other issues. Let's say it's a new prospect, a new potential customer, somebody you work with. It could be any relationship where it's just icy. You've just never gotten through. You've never really developed a relationship. There's just nothing there and they don't care. So what can we do? The I stands for involvement. What can you do to get them more involved with you and your world? What can you do to help them make their job easier? What's in it for them to even talk to you, to do business with you? Well, because they have to. We're at the same place. I have the best product. No, you've got to demonstrate the what's in it for them to work with you, how you can help them out, how can you make them look good. That is key with involvement. Another thing, too, if it's a prospect, ask questions. Great persuaders ask three times more questions to get people involved, get them thinking about it. All questions always get answered, even if it's mentally. A few podcasts ago, we talked about metaphors and how that gets people mentally involved. So we've talked many times about stories, how that persuades invisible to the radar, but it also gets them mentally involved thinking it through. If it's someone you work with, ask their advice. Hey, you've been here longer than I have. Hey, you've been in the industry this many years. Can I get your opinion? Get your advice? What do you think? What would you do? That is an off-the-charts persuasion tool. Not only does it push their esteem button, but their ideas are good ideas. Their advice is good advice, and they're going to persuade themselves along the way to solve the problem. You could have told them what to do, but in no world has that ever been persuasive. Find out what's in it for them. And just like the layered ice, you're freezing a little at a time, you're thawing this a little bit at a time. That means, as you know, we've talked about, The human brain is easier to persuade a little bit at a time than a lot bit at a time. It's easier to persuade people in a few meetings and then one big meeting. You want to melt this ice? It's a little layer at a time, later at a time, just like it was created. That is I. That's for involvement. Remember, in this process, slow is fast. Just like creating a good, clear ice cube might take a little bit longer than freezing it all at once. So I for involvement, we're spelling out ice here. C for connectivity. We're going to spend a lot of time on this one. Just learn how to be a nicer person. Well, they're the mean one. Okay, well, you can still be nice. The best way to start melting that ice in a situation like that is find something in common. You can't start a relationship. You can't connect with anybody until you find anything in common. And I know some people are harder than others, but even if it's backing up, like, all right, we're both human. We're both breathing air. We both like money, whatever it is. Probably don't need to go that far. Find something in common. Same university, like the same sports team, on the same project, kids are all in soccer, whatever it is, you can find something. Even the same TV show that you like, give yourself something to talk about. I'm not going to spend time talking about people skills. We've done plenty of podcasts on that. You can go to maximizeyourinfluence.com, check out the archives. Take your free persuasion IQ assessment. Check out influenceuniversity.com. All the links from all the studies we've been talking about are there too under podcast 509. I mean, we've talked about mirror and matching. We've talked about esteem. You know, when you boost someone's esteem, it opens doors to influence. When you slam their esteem, it shuts the door. We've talked about, you know about those, but let me give you something to think about. Not only similarities and people skills, these are important things. But up front, melting that ice is just being more familiar, being seen more. You're trying to connect with somebody, be seen more on the same online calls, just having your camera on, walking by their office, being seen in the break room, in the cafeteria, whatever it is, be seen more. You become more familiar. It's called familiarity theory, and they like you more. Local elections, party aside, you're not sure who to vote for, you vote for the sign you've seen the most. No, I don't. Well, studies show that most people do. That's just kind of how it is. Be more familiar. Be around more. And when you are in those meetings, be more personable. Have a bigger smile. Say nicer things. Acknowledge the people that you're trying to connect with. All part of that process. So we have involvement for I, C for connectivity, being more likable. Praising them, serving them, helping them, having good manners, all of those things can be very beneficial. And the E in ice is be the expert. You want to melt the ice, you got to show them you're the expert, that you know what you're doing. There's very little resistance when you're the expert. When you know what you're doing, you're the go-to person, you're going to solve the problem. Whether you're dealing with a customer, client, or prospect, or even if it's internal in your company, those are all pieces of the process. How do you become the expert? Well, like we talked about with the lawyers earlier, you have to act like it. Not in an arrogant way, but you're confident. The studies also show that when you can teach them something new in the first 4 minutes, a unique angle, different thought, a study, something they haven't thought about, proving your worth, then all of a sudden you're the expert. You have credibility. Of course, if you don't have that, borrow it. Have somebody internally say, hey, yeah, they're the stuff. They always get it done. They're the expert. They've got 10 years experience over here. You're leading a new team. Have the vice president come in and say, this is why. Here are their qualifications. Here are their skills. This is why they are leading this team. You can borrow credibility. In sales, you show a testimonial. You get a referral that we talked about last week. That's all borrowing credibility. You can do that. Part of this too, of course, is your personal development program. You're learning, you're growing. This is going to help you teach something new. You're staying up to speed on the industry and the competition, things that are happening around you. Again, this is a function of, are you the expert? Now you have to remember this expertise, this competence can be real or perceived. You actually have to have it. But then of course your nonverbals, your gestures, your body language also comes into play here. So there you go. That's how you melt the ice. I mean, if you don't have time to melt the ice, send somebody else that doesn't have history or that resistance in the relationship. Learn that slow is fast, persuading a little bit at a time, connecting a little bit at a time. and treat it like a game of chess. They're going to go, you're going to go. I love it, say at a seminar when I get someone with a mean face. They came with their spouse and they didn't necessarily want to be there. And I'm like, yeah, they're going to be my friend at the end of the day. We're going to make this happen. And it's fun. It's a game. And you should treat your persuasion and influence that way too. Think about the strategies and the tools ahead of time. Plan ahead. And that's what makes the difference. So there you have it. That's a wrap for this podcast. Tell your family, friends, and enemies that we are on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, and YouTube under Maximize Your Influence. We're switching up the special of the week for your presentation skills. So this is what I'm going to do. Hit the link, take your presentation IQ assessment. 10 questions, pretty simple. Helps with my research, helps you identify some of the things you need to work on. And I will give you the 90-minute, very intense training on how to create the perfect persuasive presentation that closes every time. I know that's a big promise. You do it right, it works. Because anybody can inform people, but I want you to be influential and charismatic. That's what makes a difference. Hit the link under podcast 509. Take your assessment, and I'll give you your reward. Regardless, remember that influence is a process. Overcoming resistance is a process. Work on these skills. Become a better negotiator, better influencer, better presenter, and go out and persuade with power.